Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
Hey, good evening, everyone. Welcome to another Tuesday night installment here at Your Remedies in the Law. Tonight, of course, we're discussing various IRS administrative remedies with our speaker, Mr. Tony Davis. My name is Martin Michaels. I'll be your host for this evening's conference brought to you by Your Remedies in the Law, which is in direct affiliation with Americans Restoring America. Before we get started with this evening, though, it is very important that I provide you with the following disclaimer. Nothing that you hear on this call tonight may be deemed by you in any way, shape, or form to be legal advice. If you are on this call because of a situation in your life where you require legal advice, I very politely ask you to hang up the phone. Now, we don't mean to sound rude when we say this. We just want to express to everyone in no uncertain terms that anyone joining this call looking for legal advice has no place or business here. Nobody here at Your Remedies in the Law or any of the programs offered by Americans Restoring America is a lawyer, attorney, or any member of the bar. Therefore, no one here is able to offer you any legal advice. If you require legal advice, my advice to you would be get an attorney. As for these calls, they're all just for entertainment purposes. It's just folks saying what they might do where they're similarly situated to you. You might get a little bit of education out of it, but mainly you're just going to get folks' opinions about what they might do. However educated and experienced these thoughts and opinions might be, they are just people's opinions nonetheless, and it's always up to you to do your own due diligence. All right, on to the next subject. I'd like to go over a few things here with Your Remedies in the Law, if I could, very quickly. First of all, if I can take everybody to the homepage of www.yourremediesinthelaw.com, if we look up in the upper right-hand corner, we see a little picture of the Constitution. Click on that, and you'll have a separate page come up with just two items on it. These two items are of much importance, though, especially if this is all new to you. First and most importantly on the left is the jurisdictionary course. This is your 24-hour crash course on the rules of civil procedure. Better known to some as American jurisprudence or ANJUR, the rules of civil procedure are essentially the foundation or structure upon which all law in America rests. So to have a firm and thorough understanding of these rules means to have at least a basic understanding of what's going on in virtually any court scenario that you find yourself in. On the right is the common law default process, mostly known for its high national win rate in most traffic cases throughout the country. At least that's what it's most popularly acquired for. But that is not really why it's on this page. The reason that we have it up here with the jurisdictionary course is when you go through it, you'll notice that it utilizes a lot of the same fundamental procedures that you learned about in the jurisdictionary course. So it kind of acts as a real-life homework assignment. Also, for a lot of folks, it's their first time committing to action. Folks seem a little more willing to take that first step, probably because of such a high success rate and traffic scenarios being such a common interest in this country today. The common law default, although known majorly for traffic purposes, has many other. Truly, it's for most scenarios that you may find yourself in where there's no damage to property or person. It's just some entity is claiming you broke a rule, therefore you must pay a civil penalty. Both of these items are very affordably priced. The jurisdictionary with a contribution of $250 and the common law default at $150. Also on the subject of Your Remedies in the Law, most of you are probably familiar now with Americans Restoring America. Every time you visit the homepage of YourRemediesInTheLaw.com, you are met with that blue box that pops up asking if you'd like to continue on to the site that you were visiting or stay and visit Americans Restoring America. The reason that we've done this is very simple. We're trying to get folks to explore. So there are multiple information providers talking about multiple subjects, as well as many other features and study groups at Your Remedies in the Law. And Your Remedies in the Law is just one of a couple dozen websites that altogether make up Americans Restoring America. So there's quite a bit for you to see, and we hope that you'll do just that at your leisure. If you have any questions about whether or not we have an information provider that could give you their personal educated opinion about your particular situation, get a hold of us at YourRemediesInTheLaw.com, and we'll be happy to assist you in any way that we can. Statewide communications. If you're not already a member, please do sign up. Tell your friends and family about it. That's that map of the United States that you see on virtually every site that we have. It's a private communications platform that enables folks to speak with one another on a local level based on a very strict pre-decided topics of discussion. Essentially, how it works is this. A wizard will walk you through a very easy setup. You know, put your name in here, click next. Put your zip code in here, click next, that sort of thing. Then it will walk you through the remainder of the setup. And then you get to a point where it will ask you what are your hot points interested in. This could range anything from credit card issues, home foreclosure, IRS matters, asset protection, or maybe veterans' rights, maybe personal health rights, anything that you can think of. And if it affects your personal rights, you should find it in that list or something that's close enough. When the setup is complete, it puts it all together, much of what you think of a social network. Though nothing like a social network. It's very custom, it's very private. But it puts you in contact with people in your local area that have similar interests to you. The idea here is to put the power of education and communication back in the hands of the common man. If you are in need of legal advice or you need someone to represent you, you're going to have to get an attorney. It's just that simple. But if there was a way, a private place that you could go to discuss matters, your personal opinions, their personal opinions, with people that were like-minded, maybe you jump online one day and you say, this happened to me today. First person comes back and says, well, I disagree with that. I don't think that they should be able to do that. I don't think that's fair. Well, that's probably not going to be of a tremendous amount of help to you. Maybe the next person comes on and says, well, I'll tell you what I would do were I similarly situated. I'd watch these YouTube videos, and then I'd go down there to my local county courthouse, go to the law library, get a law dictionary, and look at these terms. Maybe the next person after that says, those all sound like great ideas. I'd also go to this particular website and check out these educational materials that might assist you in your learning. And then for you to go and do some due diligence on what you're reading, just people's suggestions, people's opinions at all. But if you did some due diligence and educated yourself, maybe the farther you got into it, you discovered that it's not as difficult as you initially thought it would be because you're focused on one single subject. And you get to the point where you've educated yourself, and now you're handling your own affairs, your own matters. Well, folks, there's nothing illegal or unlawful about that. And that's all we're trying to do here at Statewide Communications is just very simply get people to start talking again. Of course, there's no cost to you for using Statewide Communications, either signing up or the regular using of it. And so we hope that you'll pass that around. Freedoms Radio. If you're over the road, you don't want to deal with the call process, and you're just new to your remedies in the law, and you don't yet have your username and password, therefore you can't see the phone number and the PIN. By the way, if you'd like to pick up a membership to your remedies in the law, it's very easy. You just simply click the register button. Fill out your basic information there. You'll enjoy the first 30 days for free to evaluate it. After that, it converts to a very affordable $10 a month on your credit card or your PayPal. But every single call is recorded. You have years of archives to go through, a vast wealth of knowledge, as well as many other wonderful features. But if that's not an option for you today, you have freedomsradio.com. Every night, the calls go out over the air at 9 p.m. Eastern live. There's also the question bar there where you can type in a question, click submit. As long as that's during call hours, that will pop up on the moderator screen, and we do our best to read every single one of those questions out over the air as long as they are appropriate. So you don't get the one-on-one with the information provider like you would be by being a private member, but you do get your questions answered. There's no cost to utilize Freedoms Radio, so no matter where you are or your circumstances, you never have to miss a call again if you don't wish. All right, so winding down here, I'd like to go over one last bit of housekeeping. This is your caveat emptor, or your buyer beware. For any purchase that you may make at your remedies in the law or any of the other sites underneath the umbrella of Americans Restoring America, when you come aboard and you go with an information provider, you are doing just that. Information providers pay Mr. Edward for advertising at your remedies in the law. This payment would be an expense to that information provider along with any other expenses that they might have associated with your particular product or service. When you contact us, all we simply do is listen to your particular scenario, quickly deduce from a list of folks that honestly most of you would probably never be able to find on your own just simply because they can't be found. Can we make those introductions? Not every part on the information provider is always going to be successful. Everybody always assumed for the best. But unavoidable things do sometimes happen. And when they do, you have to roll with them and deal with them as you would with anything else in life. But we also want to emphasize, though, that the intent is always to be successful. If you have any questions of that, we welcome you to visit www.yourremedyisinthelaw.com/testimonials and see what others have to say about these products and services. Now, let's touch very quickly on the subject of refunds or the refund policy. There is none. Not if the remedy is in the law, anyway. Of course, when you call board and you go with a particular information provider, again, that is exactly what you're doing. So any discussion of a refund or a credit would be a strict and private matter between you and the information provider, and even then, that's very few and far between. It must be extenuating circumstances. You are expected to have done your due diligence before you commit to any particular process or information provider's time. All right, lastly, pertaining here to all of the information providers at Your Remedy is in the Law, we'd like you to remind everybody that all of our speakers at these conferences are our guests and should be treated with the highest level of respect. If you disagree with something that a speaker has to say, that's fine. Disagreeing is how we learn, but please, you must always be civil. Besides, if a question is posed properly and then answered properly, then we can all learn something from it.
Well, thank you.
All right,
for your ramble.
That is my ramble for this evening, folks.
We know that, Martin. Thank you so very much. We appreciate that. Ladies and gentlemen, good evening. Michael Edward here, and I'm pleased to also share that GW has joined us tonight in great anticipation of hearing John and other members of the team speak. I said to you last night that we would hope that they'll make it tonight. About 30 minutes ago, I got a call that said it wasn't likely, but it's still possible. So with that in mind, I'm going to share with you tonight something about the Buck Act. And if GW chooses to stay with us this evening, I'll be welcoming his input and perhaps co-hosting with us as well. So I think what would be a really good question is how does the federal government actually get jurisdiction over you and over everything you own? Is it straight up law, or is it by deceit? What is it? Well, there's a map of the United States of America that includes the 50 sovereign and independent states, which are freely associated together in a union. It does not include the District of Columbia, which was created by the Constitution of this union as the legal home for the federal government. And that government was intended to be a servant to these union states and not their master. In order for the federal government to tax a citizen of one of the several states, they had to create a contractual nexus. And this contractual nexus is called Social Security. And to that end, you possess a Social Security number. The federal government always does everything according to principles of law. Remember that. In 1935, the federal government instituted Social Security. The Social Security Board then created 10 Social Security districts in federal areas, which covered the several states as an overlay. In 1939, the federal government instituted the Public Salary Act of 1939, which is a municipal law specifically for the District of Columbia, taking and taxing all federal and state government employees and those who live and work in any federal areas. Now, the government knows it cannot tax those citizens who live and work outside the territorial jurisdiction of Article 1, Section 8, Clause 17, or Article 4, Section 3, Clause 2. So, in 1940, Congress passed what is known as the Buck Act, reference United States Code. That would be Title 4, and then Sections 104 through 113. In Section 110E, this act allowed any department of the federal government to create a federal area for imposing, for the imposition of the Public Salary Tax Act of 1939. This imposition on this tax is at Title 4, Section 111. And the rest of the taxing law is now found in Title 26. The Internal Revenue Code, that's it. The Social Security Board had already created an overlay of a federal area. And as a result, the federal government created federal states, which are exactly like the sovereign states, occupying the same territory and the same boundaries, but whose names are capitalized versions of the sovereign states. Remember, proper names and proper nouns in the English language have only the first letter capitalized. For example, the federal state of Illinois would be all uppercase I-L-L-I-N-O-I-S, and it is overlaid upon the sovereign state, Illinois, uppercase I, lowercase L-L-I-N-O-I-S. Further, it's designated by the federal abbreviation of I-L instead of the sovereign state abbreviation of I-L-L. So, two, in this way, is Arizona, A-Z, instead of the lawful abbreviation of A-R-I-Z. California is C-A, all uppercase, as opposed to upper and lowercase, C-A-L-I-F, and the list goes on and on and on. Florida is F-L in the federal zone, and uppercase F, lowercase L-O-R-I-D-A, or F-L-A, be uppercase F, lowercase L-A, period, for Florida. If you use the two-letter capitalization abbreviated, you're declaring that the location is under the jurisdiction of the federal government instead of the powers of the sovereign state. And as a result of creating these shadow states, the federal government assumes, if no objection is made, there's your key right there, that every area is a federal area and that the citizens therein are federal citizens. Now, let's talk about the word include or includes. Title 4, Section United States Code, Section 110D, as in David. The term state includes any territory or possession. The Internal Revenue Code wants you to believe that the tax code covers everything that is listed in the code and can be expanded to involve anything else that they may decide upon at a later date. Look at the definition written in the Internal Revenue Code at Section 7701C, as in Charlie. Includes and including. The term includes and including, when used in a definition contained in this title, shall not be deemed to exclude other things otherwise within the meaning of the term defined. This would at first glance seem to say that these words are used in the code as an expansive way and not in a limiting way. However, if you carefully analyze this definition, you'll discover that it is a classic example of double talk. It really doesn't say anything, but going along with their game, if you're supposed to believe that these words are expansive in nature, how can you explain the definition of gross income as stated in the code? Section 61A, Alpha, General Definition. Except as otherwise provided in this subtitle, gross income means all income from whatever source derived, including, but not limited to, the following. Why did they feel required to add, but not limited to? Why? The answer is self-evident. They knew that including is a limiting term. And if they want to have the flexibility to contend that items other than those itemized in the code could be added to the definition of gross income, they had to specifically reserve the right to add other things, hence the addition of, quote, but not limited to, end quote. So you need to understand that the words include and includes, when used in the tax code, does not mean the other things can be included, but rather the definition is limited to these items specifically listed in the law. in Title 4, Section 110E of the United States Code, it says, quote, the term federal area means any lands or premises held. There is no reasonable doubt that the federal state is imposing directly an excise tax upon the provisions of Title 4, Section 105 of the United States Code, which states in the pertinent part, Section 105, state, and so forth, taxation affecting. In the court case Humble Oil and Refining Company versus Calvert, it's a 1971 case, it's 464 Southwest 2nd, 170, and then it says in part, thus the question comes up, what is a federal area? A federal area is any area designated by any agency, department, or establishment of the federal government. This includes the Social Security areas designated by the Social Security Administration. Any public housing area that has federal funding, a home that has a federal bank loan, a road that has federal funding, and almost everything that the federal government touches through any type of aid. Springfield versus Kenny, 1951, 104 Northeast 2nd, 65. The federal area attaches to anyone who has a Social Security number or any personal contact with the federal or state governments. Thus, federal government, in this way, has usurped the sovereignty of the people and the state sovereignty by creating these federal areas within the boundaries of the Union states under the authority of the federal Constitution at Article 4, Section 3, Clause 2, wherein it states, quote, the Congress shall have power to dispose of and make all needful rules and regulations respecting the territory or other property belonging to the United States, and nothing in this Constitution shall be construed as to prejudice any claims of the United States or of any particular state, end quote. Therefore, the United States citizen, that is the citizen of the District of Columbia, residing in one of the states of the Union, are classified as property and franchises of the federal government as individual entities. And we can go on and on and on and on. But the bottom line is, under the Buck Act of Title IV, Section 105 through 110, the federal government has created a federal area within the boundaries of all the states. And this area is similar to any territory, Guam, Puerto Rico, etc., that the federal government acquires through purchase or conquest, thereby imposing federal territorial law upon those in this federal area. Under federal territorial law, as evidenced by the executive branch's yellow fringe merchant flag, which you see flying in all the federal courts. So even when you're in your little state court in your city, why has it got a federal flag flying? So there you go. We can go on and on and on and on. I'm not going to do that. We've got some first-time callers tonight. So if you'll allow me, I'm going to make some inquiry as to where you heard from us. We have a caller from Grand Prairie, Texas. Let's see, ending in 3698. May you, would you share with us where you heard from us, where you heard about us? Well, no sooner did I do that, they hung up. Why would they do that? Okay. Bruce, you raised your hand real quick, and you're from the same area. Go ahead, Bruce. Bruce?
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Yeah, you pressed
okay,
star
cool.
two. How,
or star
was
seven.
That friend of yours?
No, it was not. But I have a question about the land patent. And I was referred here by your friend Frank in Georgetown.
Okay. So the land patent has to do with a number of issues. We have a member of the team that has done this many times over the last 30-plus years. Plus, also, I am having a conversation with a gentleman that only attends to this. Hoping to bring him aboard as an information provider, which GW was very kind to make the referral. But other than that, I don't have anything more to answer for you other than the first thing that you have to do is first correct your status, because
correct.
in your current status, when can a slave own property? When can property own property? It can't.
When you're not a slave.
Correcting your status. Sorry?
I said when you're not a slave.
Yeah, when you're not a slave, and all of us are deemed slaves by open and flagrant fraud of the federal government when they, with a birth certificate that they're looking at from whatever state of the union you were born in, they then categorize you as a United States citizen and let you fight your way out of it. So correcting your status is paramount to that.
Would that be step one?
Yeah, that would be step one. Actually, that's step one in anything. We have now a position that there is no information provider that's going to assist you other than Bernie with the asset protection. That's a different animal.
Right.
Without correcting your status, you've got to do that first. That's your leverage.
Okay.
Okay.
And then second follow-up question to that is, I'm actually in the car business with a large dealership in Texas, and I understand there's a way to get the original manufacturer's title on a vehicle if the dealership will do that for you if you pay cash.
Correct. And we actually have a automobile dealer in the Colorado, Nevada, Wyoming area. He has several dealerships who's willing to do that.
Awesome. I will inquire my guys, because I know a couple of the general managers of particular dealerships of this group, and I don't know if they'll do that or not, but I will find out, because that will give people all over Texas all kinds of opportunity there.
Sure, sure. And, of course, here's the thing. They're going to say, well, we're commanded. It's a statute. We have to do it. Well, what is the statute? I don't know, but we have to.
Right. Well, mostly it's what I'll call, I'm in my 60s, and most of the people working in the finance department and most other positions are in their 20s and 30s. So their kids, they don't know any better except to do what they're told.
Yeah, yeah. They've gone through a cycle of, they never learned in school to be independent thinkers.
Exactly. Okay, thank you. I'll mute myself now.
All right, thank you. Well, I'm going to mute you on my end. That's okay. Anyways, thank you for your question. Welcome to the call. We have one other first-time caller, also from the same neck of the woods. Perhaps they will not hang up on me. This phone number is ending in 6510. From Arlington, Texas area. If you'd be so kind as to share where you heard about us.
Yes, good evening. I was told to come and listen by GW himself, and I am currently working. What's that, sir?
He's the guru, man. Yeah, he's good.
Yes, sir. And I'm already working on the process of getting everything started.
Sure. May I know your first name, please, for my board?
Yes, my name is Josh.
Thank you, Josh. It's a pleasure meeting you, sir.
You as well, sir.
Yeah. Welcome aboard, Josh.
Thank you. If I can ask one quick question.
Absolutely.
And it's in regards to land. So I'm a veteran. I took out a VA home loan after I moved to the Dallas area. I had purchased my VA home loan through a specific bank. It was never by name transferred. However, the company itself was bought. But I've never received a change of title once that company was bought. So I believe any action that the current bank is doing, I have not seen any authorization for any permission for that bank to act in their stead, nor transfer.
Okay. Let me ask you, what is the dollar amount of the mortgage?
Whenever we first purchased the house, it was at $399,000.
$400,000. Okay. All right. The reason why I ask is because one of the things that we like to do, first you get what's called a securitization audit. And, you know, it's just like anything else that you go shopping for. You have all different kinds of offers made to you for all different prices to do a securitization audit. The one that we operate through and have for well over a decade now is $4,500. I've seen them on the net for $500. But you have to understand that there are all different offerings out there. The ones that we have, it's a Bloomberg screenshot, Bloomberg terminal that the report's taken from, and the gentleman or the lady that's actually doing the report will create an affidavit, and more than that, will appear in court. That's the key right there. Will they appear in court to give testimony? So anyways, you get the securitization audit. That's number one. You do a qualified written request. That's number two. Your property you place into a charitable religious trust where you name one of the members of the team as the trustee. And the purpose of that is having that position as the trustee, they have every legal right, they have standing to go into court and defend and or prosecute any trespass on the title. So once that's been put in place, then an offer is made to the lending institution saying, in effect, I have a check for $400,000. The trustee will actually write the letter that says that I have a check for $400,000 that we'll be glad to make payable to you upon you providing the following. The original wet ink signature note, an affidavit by the custodian of records when they receive that note and how they held it secure, that they still have it in their possession. Then the second thing is the same question with regards to the deed of trust or the mortgage, depending on your state. Again, looking for the original and the affidavit by the custodian of records to that effect. And then, of course, thirdly, would be the financial officer of the lending institution that would provide an affidavit that just simply says, you know, that they followed the generally accepted accounting principles, the GAAP, and that they lent their own capital. They did not lend credit because it's against Title 12 if you lend credit as a bank. It's a violation of federal law. So we just ask for those things, and here's your check. You've got 30 days. And when they don't provide anything for you in that 30 days, then a lawsuit's filed in federal court against them for quieting the title. Actually, state court, I think, is where it's filed, in state court. And for quieting the title. And you show the court where you have the $400,000. You show the court what your requirements were in order for them to prove up their claim. And if they can't do it, you go for quiet title. Once that's been done, and the title now is quieted, there is a second fee on top of getting this all started, which I haven't even talked about that, but I just want to let people know. There's a second fee where 25% of the value of the note or 25% of the value of the property, whichever is less, because sometimes people can be upside down, you'll be required to get a new mortgage. And that 25% is then paid to the team for what they've done. So you, in effect, what you're doing is if you have a $400,000 note, now you have a $100,000 note, and you're good to go. A lot, big difference. Anyways, I just want to share that with you. Going to quiet title is the key. And also, too, since you want to go to Allodium on the land through the land patent, of course, you have to have corrected your status first.
Right. All right. Thank you very much, sir.
Josh, thank you, and welcome to our call. I see where the first-time caller from Prairie, Texas, appeared again with the phone number ending it, and they just hung up again. What is this? That's insane. All right. Was there anything else that we want? Oh, I covered all that. So let's open it up for questions. Before we do, GW, do you have any comments you want to make?
No, I just wanted to hear about. I knew you were gonna get into what Brother John's doing.
John went,
a new thing.
Yeah, John went to Lost Wages yesterday. Mm-hmm. Spent the night. Went to a closing this morning, and everything closed. So it'll be another 12, 15 days for the title company to finish their paperwork,
which,
you know, is how it follows after every closing. So we've
graduated a new student,
as John likes to say.
Okay. Now, closing what? What are we talking about a closing on? A house or?
$1.3 million property.
Okay.
They ended up getting free and clear.
Ah, that's great. That's great.
Don't you just love fraud?
And it ain't over yet.
What I mean by it's not over yet, what I mean by that is that there's a copious list of fraudulent acts upon multiple people within the banking sector over the past several years that are now going to be, well, we're going to wait 2 weeks, of course. But after that, John is going to be opening up that can of worms, which in all likelihood will result in federal indictments. And if it can be brought through the Whistleblower Act, you know that the financial reward there is like, 33% or 66%. I forget what it is. It's an enormous amount.
So
we're all excited about that.
That's great. Awesome.
Yes, sir. In fact, I see Elmer here. Elmer met with them, had dinner with them last night. Let me unmute Elmer. I'm going to put you on the spot, if I may, sir. You want to share with us what you heard last night at the dinner table?
We had dinner.
Or not? Yeah, we had dinner.
Yeah. We had dinner. We had lamb and a few other things, and salad and a potato, and we had a great conversation, and everything went really well. I'm glad to hear that things went well today. Yes, I hadn't heard anything yet, so no, that's tickled. No, John and I all of us had a really great conversation about how things are done. Yeah. And I think John has calmed me down a little bit. He told me I needed to get more patience because I told him last night that Job and I are not related. And I have a tendency to push things pretty hard and fast. And we talked about some of that. And I'm thinking about it all. But
yeah.
I gave him some information. I hope he'll pass on to you as well.
We talked
anyway.
About that, and yes, he will when he gets settled in. Yep.
Okay, good.
All right.
Nope, all right. It's all
thank
good.
You. Yes, sir, thank you. Any follow-up on the water thing that you were talking to me about three weeks ago?
Oh, one of the guys that's involved in it has got the dang COVID. One of the main guys in Texas that's involved in it has the COVID, okay. So... on top of everything else, now we're dealing with that. But all of my guys here have had COVID as well. So, I mean, every one of them. I've had seven guys out with COVID in the last 2 weeks. So, not
I
much
sure
fun.
The old days when,
I sure miss the old days when we caught a cold or got the flu.
Yeah.
Now we've
got
COVID.
And it just keeps rounding the dang bend. And these guys were all coughing their heads off and backs hurting and chest was tight. I mean,
yep.
Anyway, it's, it doesn't sound like a really fun deal to get involved, man. So far I haven't got it too bad. So.
Well, sit close today, you'll get it.
My guys, my son had it, and he's got four guys that work with him. We've got one brother that's got it, and he's got one guy that works with him, and then my electrician, he had it, and my brother, another brother, his wife passed away, last week, and of course all the grandkids came down and whatnot, and next thing you know, God, they've all got it again. So,
sure,
been a tough go.
All right, well let me mute you out, Elmer, and see what we can do here about Q&A. Thank you, sir. So press star 2 on your keypad, ladies and gentlemen, star 2. If you have any questions or comments to make, press star 2 on your keypad. Those of you on Freedom's Radio, you'll see in the center right of your monitor the silhouette of a rectangle laying on its side. Left-click into that, and then type away your comment or your question. Underneath that, you'll see a place to put your name and some other information. Hit submit. It'll pop up on my end, and I will be happy to give voice to your comment or your question. Let's see if anything else here. Press star 2. Let me go check Freedom's Radio while someone thinks of what they want to say. If not, we're going to have a slow call tonight, a low call, and be leaving early otherwise. We don't want to do that. We're having too much fun. At least I am. So I'm refreshing now at Freedom's Radio. I'll tell you what, I'm going to go back to Bruce, and then we'll go back to Freedom's Radio because it wasn't populating for me. Go ahead, Bruce.
Yeah, one more question I had was I've only heard cursory information on what a land patent can do for you. Could you elaborate a little bit on that?
Sure. Well, first off, all land came into receivership into the federal government to begin with. And then it was disposed of through land patents, or it originated through either the King of Spain or the King of France or the King of England. For instance, here in Florida, the King of Spain gave a large tract of land from the beach 20, 30 miles west to somebody named Domingo Reyes. And that's the fountainhead for a lot of land here in the north central Florida area. And it's the same way throughout. In the New England states, it's kind of a cluster bomb because the deeds can be in any number of places, including church records of all places. And so there's a great extent there. But once you've got that, then you have what's called a give me one second here. I'll pull up the word so that I use the correct word. I've got a mental block on this for some reason, and I have a hard time remembering land. Elodio. Give me one.
While you're
an abstract.
An abstract. Many years ago, I worked as a landman in college and for a few years after. And the item that has the map of the county with all the tracts laid out is called an abstract.
Right, right. Meets and bounds. So
you go to a title
company that does an abstract of title. Back in the 70s, I had one done on my home then at that time, mm-hmm. and it was $600. So today I would well expect it to be $2,000-$3,000 for an abstract of title.
I don't know. I haven't bought a house in 20 years because I'm in the same house. However, mm-hmm. to buy title insurance, which includes an abstract being done, was some ridiculous amount of money on your closing costs. And
right.
I told them, no, I'll go do it. Like, how do you know how to do it? I'm like, I used to run title to find properties to go to the owner and lease their property for oil and gas exploration in College Station, Texas in the 1980s. And it's not that hard. Anybody can do it.
So
no, you can't do that. We have to, the title company has to do that. I'm like, Okay, whatever.
Can I interject here? It's GW.
Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
My headphones just took crap. I didn't charge them up right, so they're on the charger, but hopefully you can hear me okay. Anyway, the abstract that most people get nowadays with the escrow, you know, when they move their property through escrow and everything else, that abstract just goes back and to about 20 levels from what I understand and what Ammon tells me. Okay. And the people that I know that pretty much.
So it would not go back, for instance, in Texas to the original land grant from Stephen A. Austin.
Yeah. You're picking up on it now. See, this is good because this is what you want. See, this is where you have to take it back to the original patent signed by the president. And so just in a nutshell, the thing that,
let me stop you for a second. I'm drilling down a little bit for a reason. So the original land grant or patent, as you're calling it, had to come from the president of the United States to, for instance, Stephen A. Austin, who was one of the founders of Texas as a republic and as a state. Is that what you're saying?
Correct. Correct. You're going back to the very beginning and bringing that whole abstract forward. And because really in reality, what's happening here is, and the reason it's so great to have your status corrected in this process is because it's sovereign to sovereign. That's it in a nutshell. It's okay.
That answers my question. How does that work? What is the I don't want to say formula, but what is the process that connects the dot and makes it legal, and then nobody has authority over you, or nobody has authority over your land in that situation, and you're done paying property taxes, I assume.
Oh yeah, yeah. Yeah, it becomes a gray spot on the county records, and you know, that's one of the good things. And then one of the other things is, you know, because it is now literally your land, not your real estate, which is another, you know, word of art trickery. Okay.
Right. Meaning you're renting it.
Well, yeah,
you're occupying it and paying a rent to the government.
Yeah, you're a tenant on the land. Right.
On the land. Yeah, that's the term.
So now it's sovereign on his own land. And now whoever is saying that they're from the federal or state government, they actually need permission to cross the boundaries of the land to get to the improvements of the land where they be.
I love it. Thank you.
Yeah, I was explaining this process to one of my clients. That's doing, he's getting all set up right now, presently. He's in Washington State. He owns a bunch of property on a mountain. Anyway,
it's really hard up there because of the leftist government up there.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. But he had to get a ride one day. This was a long time ago. He's been up in that area for a long time. And he said, I had to get a ride from a sheriff one day to get to a certain place, and they sort of pulled up to the boundary of the property, and he says, well, it's over here. He goes, the sheriff says, I cannot go across the boundary here. I do not have permission, but you can.
Wow.
And this
That's
guy
cool.
was like, he remembered that, and he put everything together. So when we were talking about it, he was like, oh man, you're sewing so many of these things together for me now. So yeah,
that's awesome.
Yeah.
A buddy of mine in Florida just went through some stuff like that with a company in Washington State. And it finally got to the point where they're not paying me enough to put up with this. And there was, it's a long story. I won't go into it here, but, so you do this in every state, I'm assuming.
Yeah, you can do it in every state. You can do it in every state. There, there are, you know, the reason I like to bring in the experts when doing it, not just buying some, let's say kit that, and there's many available online, and you can buy books and everything else.
I've got a group of people that we're all about to have a financial miracle in our life, and we're buying ranches all over the place, mostly Montana, Colorado, Wyoming, probably Texas, Oklahoma, Florida, and so we'll be looking to do that probably later this year. And so, you know, that's the kind of thing we're looking for is, okay, we're not trying to cause trouble. We don't want to be smart asses to the county officials or anything. We just want to be good citizens. But, you know, if I spend millions of dollars on a big property, I don't want to continue to pay millions of dollars to the government just so I can sit on my property.
Yeah,
Bruce. Yeah. Let me interrupt. Let me
jump in here real quickly with something. Have you listened to the Saturday call with Justice Beshear regarding Corporation Soul and charitable religious trust?
I am very familiar with Corporate Soul. I have actually pushed. I say pushed. I have presented that to some other people. I'm not 100% up on it lately. I'm very familiar with Bernie, and what they do, and I've got a number of friends that did this and set them up already probably 5 or 6 years ago. But okay. If that's the direction I need to go, at the time I just couldn't afford it. So, I understand that. If that's where I need to be looking at this, then I get it.
Okay.
Let me just share with you the three tools
that we operate with in the toolbox.
Is correcting your status.
That's fireproofs you.
Right.
Operating through a corporation soul for the benefit of a religious society, holding properties in charitable religious trusts. And when you're doing things commercially, they're on the Wednesday call, there's an LLC that has no tax liability associated.
Wow. I was not aware of that.
Yes.
So
you have a Wednesday call also. I'm assuming same credentials to dial in.
Yep. Yeah.
Cool.
We make it easy for you. Same phone, same pin, same time, just a different speaker and topic.
So is there tonight, and granted I've got way too many windows up. I'm a kind of an IT, I don't say hacker dude, but I was an IT guru and then quit doing that for a couple of years, just got burnt out on it. I was not able to get into any of your websites tonight.
Tonight?
Yes. While we were on the call, I couldn't get into correctmystatus.com or americanbybirth.com.
All right. We have – type in HTTPS. Force it to go to that.
Okay, say that again.
HTTPS.
HTTPS.
No.
I'm sorry.
P. Yeah. It's HTTPS.
Oh, HTTP.
/ www.americanbybirth. There it is. You got to come in. HTTPS.
https://www.americanbybirth.com www.americanbybirth.com.
Yep.
And I'm using it goes there now. I'm using a VPN that I usually go through some foreign country so that nobody knows where I am. It worked. It's back up. And I had been looking at this and going to the archives and listening to the calls for several months now. But, it works. And I have an account. All right. Well, thank you very much.
One more thing, and I share this with everyone
whose name is Bruce. In the Hebrew. In the Hebrew. I'm serious. In Hebrew.
Mm-hmm. All right.
I mean, look, growing up in my era, if your name was Bruce, you got hammered. Okay? But
in Hebrew, I had all kinds of not fun nicknames growing up.
Right. Exactly. So I'm
leaving you with something positive here.
In the Hebrew, if you look at your name phonetically, it's
mm-hmm.
Baruch. It's your name pronounced in Hebrew phonetically off of your spelling would be Baruch.
Baruch.
Which is blessed.
Baruch.
Awesome.
Baruch Hashem Baranai.
Yeah, there you go.
Awesome.
Anyway,
I appreciate that.
Just wanted to share that with you. Give
me a
badge of honor today.
I used to have a lot of hair 40 years ago, but, you know, Broccoli Head was one of the nicknames.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm not going to share the ones that. I'm sorry. I'll leave it alone.
There were worse ones, but that was kind
much
of
worse.
Funny, actually.
All righty. Thank you. Now, our last caller is Thomas in Panama City. I think it's Panama City, Florida. I don't know. Thomas writes in, and this bounces right off of the conversation that we just had with Bruce. How can one do tax-free business in the public using a limited liability company after correcting one's status? And the answer is very simple. You have created two charitable religious trusts. And it's the two charitable religious trusts that each hold 50% management, if you would, in the limited liability company. And by doing that, you have a non-taxpayer entity, two of them, basically owning the LLC, and you're controlling it fully preferably through a corporation sole as the trustee. Now, when funds become available by you doing good business or because a certain reevaluation took place somewhere, then that dovetails perfectly into the golden horseshoe that Justice Beshear creates, which you can find at www.theultimateinassetprotection.com/power. And you can find 10, 11, 12 PDFs there that show you this entire golden horseshoe. And when you see the part where it talks about the two foreign grantor trusts, once those foreign grantor trusts are created, they slip in right behind the two charitable religious trusts that you started with. And so it's a perfect dovetail, and it is a perfect way through the law, completely in the law, to step outside of any possible tax liability, which if you use Mr. Slevin's limited liability company, it does not have a tax liability to begin with. So I hope that answers all the questions that we have with regards to that. I do want to mention that we have news from Saturday. I wasn't going to talk about it until I was able to do some confirmations on it. Let me see if I can find it here real quickly. Zimbabwe has redenominated. Give me a moment here. My Gmail had closed down on me. Here we go. Dum, 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 dum. Where are you? Was here just a second ago. Refresh. You're going to want this one. Here we go. Right here. This is a conversion. Zimbabwe is no longer doing their Zim notes. They're being exchanged into something else. Let me see if I can find the proper language here. I don't have the language, but They're no longer, it's now another Zim entity denomination. And what it equates out to is that if you have a billion Zim notes, once you have converted it to their new currency, that 1 billion will be worth 29,500. Conversely, 10 billion would be worth $295,000. 50 billion would be worth 1.47 million. And 100 trillion is worth 2.95 billion USD. So we have this. Tune in tomorrow. We're going to talk more about it as I learn more about it. As to where to go to do your exchanges and things like that. This has nothing to do with the RV that we're all in anticipation for. However, it is a separate change from what Zimbabwe is doing. So I hope I've answered some questions tonight that have satisfied you. Anything else, press star 2 on your keypad. Otherwise, we're going to say goodnight, and we'll join again together tomorrow night with Mr. Slevin, and we'll talk more about an update on where to exchange your Zim. I'm glad to be able to share that with you. Let me refresh to make sure that my machine's just not being slow and go from there. Dump, dump, dump. Press star 2 on your keypad. I'm getting a refresh on my screen right now and it's not refreshing. First thing I'm doing is I'm buying a new computer, one with a lot of RAM, headroom. I'm not getting anywhere with this. Hold on. Let's see what we do over here. Q&A, refresh. Stay with me here. Nope, nothing there. Refresh on the phone calls here. It's still blank on my end. Just bear with me, folks. Let this catch up with itself. There we go. All right. So, no other questions. Thank you all for joining us this evening. Tomorrow night, same time, same place, 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 Central, 7 Mountain, 6 Pacific. Same phone and pin you dialed in with. Until then, good night, everyone, and be well.
The conference is now completed. Goodbye. Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID, followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.